Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So just to do a quick recap of where we're up to, we're talking about these false witnesses that receive or are supposed to receive a reciprocal punishment. They get the punishment they try to inflict on the defendant that they're accusing. What we've been talking about so far in Maseches Makos is exceptions to the rule where they do not receive the punishment they tried to inflict on somebody else, but rather they get lashes, right? The name of the tractate, right? That is the default penalty, as we've already learned why that's the default penalty when you cannot give them the punishment that they tried to inflict on somebody else. We've had five cases you've analyzed so far. You had the two cases in the first Mishnah of the accusation of being not being a Kohen, the second accusation of being somebody who killed by accident. We had the extra third case that came up in the Gemara about the witnesses who testify about a daughter of a Kohen and her adulterer, that they don't get killed with the same death penalty that they accused her of getting. She would have got sreifa, burning. They only get strangulation, chenek. Then we had two extra cases. We had the case of the accusation that somebody has to pay a kofar payment, that his animal, who was warned already in advance, killed another person. Right, the false witnesses don't pay that kofar payment because it's an atonement payment. And then the last thing I think you guys probably finished off with yesterday is the accusation that the guy stole, or essentially that he should be sold as a Jewish slave because he did not have the money to pay. So he talked about who didn't have the money, and the conclusion was the only way they do get sold is if nobody has any money, not the guy who they accused, and also not them. If nobody has any money, then the false witnesses would get sold too. But if either one of them has money, then the false witnesses would not get sold into slavery, and that's the case of the exception, that they do not get sold. We're up to the last case that we had mentioned in the Brisa about Rabbi Akiva's case. Rabbi Akiva's words were that if they don't pay via their own testimony. Basically what that means is they confess, right? So false witnesses, before they get caught, that's what it sounds like in Rabbi Akiva, before they get caught, if they would confess, so they wouldn't have to pay. Mm-hmm. Now that's actually not true. Mm.
Okay.
Not true at all. We didn't hear that one.
What's that called again?
Moda. It's al piatzman. It says ein mishalvim al piatzman. Right. So here they don't pay based on their own confession. That's the simple words of Rabbi Akiva. But we're going to see that it's not 100% true. So let's start.
There's a parallel thing like that where if you're not a false witness, but if you've done something and you do a moda.
Yeah, we're going to see that right now. We're going to see where it's coming up exactly what you're alluding to. Okay, so the Gemara says we're on the third line from the bottom, the two dots. It says, Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru. In the name of Rabbi Akiva, they said that you don't have to pay if you admit. If the false witnesses admit what they did, they don't have to pay. My time, what's the reason of Rabbi Akiva? What's Rabbi Akiva's reasoning? Kasava, Rabbi Akiva holds knasahu. This whole concept of false witnesses is a knas. A knas means it's a fine. I mean, whenever based in rules that that somebody has to pay money, there's two options of what that payment could be. Either it could be a compensation, right, that somebody caused some damage, right, he caused some negative effect. So when based in rules that he has to pay money, they're saying that he has to pay back what he damaged. It's a compensation for the loss that was caused. Mm-hmm. The alternative type of payment based in can make somebody pay is a fine, right? A fine can be a number of different things. You saw one kind, it could be an atonement for that person, right? It could be preventative to prevent this guy from doing it again in the future. It can be a flat rate because Beis Din thinks that this whole crime is just too popular. The fine would be an atonement. But not all fines are even atonements.
Right.
Some fines can just be because Beis Din doesn't want you to be involved, or that this is too prevalent of an issue. Beis Din doesn't want you to be continuing down this path. There's no damage you caused, but you did something wrong that Beis Din doesn't want you to continue this.
So if I get a parking fine, is that an atonement?
No. Depends. Maybe. Could be.
It's a penalty.
If you did something wrong morally, depends if parking there immorally is part of the picture or not.
You get a penalty first. And then you're going to do it again anyway.
Okay, so the first point is we assume that Rabbi Akiva holds whenever false witnesses have to pay money, whenever they pay money, because they've got caught being false witnesses, and now based on rules they have to pay, it's always a fine and it's never a compensation. And we have a rule, as you pointed out, uknas, and whenever there's a fine, ein mishalem al piatzmo. That's a general rule that you never pay fines based on confession. If you admit to causing damage to somebody, sure, you have to pay back the compensation. That's not going to get you off the hook. But when there is no damage you really caused, there's just based on wanting to impose a fine on you, that fine they don't impose when you confess. Yeah. That is the that's the general point. So we say, oh, Rabbi Akiva says false witnesses are a fine. So perfect, it fits back into the general principle that whenever there's a fine, you don't pay when you confess. Right? So far, so good.
Yeah.
Omar Rabba, Rabba says, Teda. Rabba says, I'll bring you a proof that this is true. Bring you a proof of what? I'll bring you a proof that false witnesses is really a fine and it's not a compensation. Right? Once I prove it's a fine, so it's obvious you don't pay when you admit. He's going to bring a proof that false witnesses is a fine. Teda, I'll bring you a proof. Shehare lo asu maisa v'neharginu mishalmim. Because the false witnesses didn't actually accomplish anything. Right, whatever they tried to, remember we learned this before, if the false witnesses succeed, they don't get any punishment. It's only in their stage of conspiracy when they get caught before their plot succeeded, that's when they get this punishment. And I don't know if the rabbi went through this, but I made sure to go through this with the guys who I was learning with, is that a very important principle for Maseches Makos is that we believe in God. Right? when Basin's not able to employ some penalty, we still believe that God is the ultimate arbiter of reward and punishment. Yeah. Right? When the guy who murders doesn't get any punishment, we learned about that. Yeah. The false witness, right? God is the ultimate arbiter of reward and punishment. He just wants us to partner up with him when there's some blatant affront to the laws in society. And God says, okay, now I want you people to partner up with me to fix the world. Right? That's usually what our job here is in this world. But sometimes it's not possible. And it's only possible when we follow the exact recipe that the Torah sets out on how to give out fines and punishments. When we can't do it based on the Torah, so we fall back on our belief in God, that God's going to take care of reward and punishment. So we have to appreciate that these false witnesses, they don't get punished when they succeed. They only get punished when they were in the stage of plotting, in the stage of conspiracy, because as we mentioned, the verse says, as they conspired to do to their brother. It's only when it's in the stage of conspiracy. Once they actually succeeded, that's not the verse in the Torah which says to give them the reciprocal punishment. That is not a conspiracy. That is a successful plot.
Yeah.
So over here, what we're saying is false witnesses never get punished when they succeed. They only get punished when they're plotting. And therefore, they never actually did anything, so it can't be a compensation. The punishment when we actually punish them can't be a compensation because they never succeeded in doing anything. Mm-hmm. It has to be a fine for their plot, right? For that mere act of plotting, they get fined.
Discouraging.
Right? So that's Rava's proof that really the whole case of false witnesses is a fine. It's not a compensation. These guys didn't even succeed in doing anything.
But you know what? Doesn't that bring up the concept of can you be punished before... Let's say I'm plotting a murder, and I'm thinking it over in my head.
The Minority Report question.
You know?
You guys saw that movie? It was like 20 years ago.
I could even change my mind afterwards. My mind and say, you know what? I'm not going to do this. Nah,
the Torah doesn't punish you for things before you do it.
Yeah, in this case...
Right? This is a case of a conspiracy. This is the big novelty in Adam Zomim, right? Mm-hmm. That we're willing to punish these guys for something they didn't do. It's a knas. It's a fine, not a compensation. There's no, right? And you'll see. It's very interesting because it could be way worse than money. Now, they could get killed for this.
Yeah.
These guys can get killed for this for not having actually ultimately killed anybody else. They can get killed.
No action.
Yeah, the spoke is not an action, as we mentioned.
Right, but it's not in their thought.
It's true, it certainly can't be a compensation because there was no damage caused by them. At the end of the day, they didn't do anything to anybody.
Well, they did because the guy
gave
got
a guy.
Sorry, Robert, but the guy got convicted.
No, if the guy gets convicted,
if the guy's been convicted.
No, if the guy gets convicted that they accused, they don't get punished. That's what I was trying to say.
They wouldn't be there otherwise.
No.
Here's what happens: first set of witnesses testifies in court. Joe killed somebody, right? Now, let's say the trial plays out, and based in rules, Joe guilty. You are now subject to the death penalty. The false witnesses get no punishment. If after that, two more witnesses come and say, "Hey, what are you guys talking about? You were with us in China that day." Right? False witnesses get nothing.
But here they say, I saw Joe kill this guy.
And then before Joe gets convicted. No. If Joe gets convicted, they get nothing. Just listen for a second.
Yeah, yeah, I'm listening. Listen.
If Joe gets convicted of their accusation, and then after the conviction, two more witnesses come and say, hey, first set of witnesses, what are you guys talking about? You were with us in China that day. The first set of false witnesses get no punishment.
Can you say convicted? No. Or you mean they carried out the execution?
No, it doesn't have to be. No, exactly. Hear ye, hear ye. You have now been convicted of the crime of murder, right? That is enough to make the false witnesses not able to be punished anymore. As soon as that judgment comes down from Beis
Din. So some...
The only time the false witnesses are punished is when they testify. Before the Beis Din has ruled on the case that they testified about, two more witnesses come along and they say, how are you guys testifying with us in China? Before they even succeeded in having the judgment passed... Yeah. They get
very. So that's not what we were told. So what we were told that once you are convicted and before you are punished at that period,
convicted to execution or penalty,
then you get then the false witnesses get punished.
They can't be a false witness otherwise.
You're right. That's how Rashi says it.
It's a logic.
You're right. You're right. That's how Rashi says it. Yeah. It says that they were falsified before. They were killed. You're right. I made a mistake. I made a mistake. I apologize. You're correct.
Yeah, it only went that way because of...
You're right. I had it wrong. It's not in between the time of the testimony and the ruling. It's in between the time of the ruling and the application of the punishment.
Right.
That's correct.
Your thoughts, right? Just the timing.
But again, it's the same point. Even after the ruling has been passed, before they've been executed, before the judgment has been executed, they still haven't done anything to the other guy, right? They still haven't caused any damage to him, right? So whenever they're being punished, it still must be a fine. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Yes. So it's something what Tony said, because if he's thinking of doing something bad...
It's not as much as this, because here they've actually succeeded in...
It hasn't caused anything to happen. In this case, by your testimony, although it's not an action, you've caused something...
You've caused a ruling to now be in place. Now, that ruling can be overruled once we realize that you were lying the whole time, the first set of witnesses. But it's more than just thought. It is more than just thought. But it's still a big novelty that they haven't actually caused any effect yet, really.
They got, to add to that, they got caught red-handed, clearly.
That's true.
Well, Tony's example, there's nothing really happened.
I mean, just another interesting point about this get caught clearly red-handed business is that this is still a big, big novelty in the Torah that we should believe the second set of witnesses over the first set. It's not quite red-handed to say that we have another set of witnesses that said that these first set were in China. Who says the second set of witnesses isn't lying?
That's right. The first set comes along.
Right. We're gonna get into that story of 100 sets. Right. But the point is that the Torah tells us that this is the way we're supposed to deal with it, and we should believe the second set. It's still a big chiddush. So I just don't know if I would go quite as far to say as they got caught red-handed, right, with their hand in the cookie jar. Not quite. There's a dispute, and we are told to believe the second set of witnesses over the first.
You believe the first, we have to believe the second. If you believe the first time, you have to believe the second time.
No, because let's say there's a different way that the testimony goes. Mm-hmm. The first set of witnesses say Joe killed somebody on Monday, and the second set of witnesses, no, Stevie killed somebody on Monday, right? So if I believe the first set without the second set, maybe I should believe the second set also. But there's mutually inconsistent stories. I can't possibly believe both.
And that's
right?
How we know we have a case of Adim Zomim.
But Adim Zomim is the same thing. It's mutually exclusive testimonies.
Exactly.
I would have thought I wouldn't be able to believe either.
And they can't be Adim Zomim without that dispute. That's the proof of Adim Zomim.
I'm not following what you're saying. Say it again.
If the first set said, you know, I did it. Oh, yeah, we have to believe you. The second said, you couldn't be in there because you were over here that time.
Right.
That's the proof that they're false witnesses.
I don't know, because who says we should believe the second set?
Then you have to believe them just like you believe the first until the third set comes out.
We don't. I mean, you're right in a sense. I'm just saying logic would not dictate that. Logic would dictate we have two separate inconsistent testimonies. We should throw them both out, right?
Yeah.
The Torah is telling you a big novelty that in the specific case of Adim Zomim, we are to believe the second set over the first. But I'm just telling you that I don't think that that's logical, right? There's no more reason to believe the second set in this case than there would be when they're disputing the facts of the case. Torah's telling us a chiddush. As long as they don't dispute the facts of the case and they're disputing the eligibility of the first set of witnesses to testify, we do believe them. I'm just telling you, it's not logical. I don't think that that's logical. Right?
No.
Yeah.
Torah.
Yeah, well, no, it's a chiddush, right? The Torah's telling you this is how to behave, even though it may not be logical. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Suppose a witness decides he's going to be a false witness. He decides he wants to punish this guy for whatever. He's going to be a false witness and say yes. He murdered someone. Then he changes his mind. Said, no, maybe I shouldn't do it.
Good. Beis Din says, we're not going to kill anybody. Good. Thank you for admitting. But you don't get the punishment.
Yeah, but how do we know what he was thinking?
What do you mean?
How do we apply or do not apply a punishment if we don't know what he was thinking?
That was my point.
How do we find out what he was thinking?
No, he started his action and then stopped.
I don't know. What was the matter what he was thinking? He comes originally and he says, Joe killed somebody. Then he comes back and he says, I lied.
I'm going to be a false witness because I want this guy convicted. He didn't kill anybody. I'm going to say he did. Then all of a sudden I changed my mind and I don't want to do it anymore because whatever reason. Yeah. How do we know what he was thinking?
What do you mean what he was thinking? When he says, I want to change my mind, does he come and say something or does he just keep it in his mind the whole time?
How do I know what he was thinking, what he did it or not?
Thinking.
It doesn't matter what your intention was when you were thinking. Were you trying to lie? Were you not trying to lie? When you come to testify in court, you better be sure you're saying the truth. If you say, oh, yeah, it was Monday that day, and then they come, two witnesses say, what are you talking about? You were in China. You say, actually, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I really was in China that day. Basically, it's still going to kill you, right? Right? You make sure that they would have killed the other guy based on your testimony. You can't say something in court unless you're sure of what you're saying, right? It doesn't matter what you were thinking or not thinking, right? You did the crime. Right? You did the crime, and the crime bears the reciprocal punishment. Okay, so
But if you're in the court testifying, and you reverse your testimony while you're in the court testifying...
We don't accept a reversal of testimony.
We don't accept that.
Here's how it goes. If you're in the middle of your testimony, and you retract it, it's as if you never gave a testimony yet. Right? It's like all toch kedei dibur. It's within one testimony, so we can... Whatever the conclusion of your words are, that will be your testimony. If Basin has now processed your testimony, and now before the trial concludes, you come back and you want to alter your testimony, we don't accept an altering of your testimony. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, this is really this is very related to this whole question of confessions. So the two witnesses come and they say, we lied, we're sorry, we're doing tshuva, chatasi, right? We lied, We're confessing our mistestimony. So in such a case, we don't even listen to their second testimony. The only way we would stop the trial from continuing is if a second set of witnesses came and discredited the first set, or if a second set of witnesses came and just argued with the... So we'd end up following through with their original testimony, unless there's some other testimony we can attach on. We don't let a witness who's testified change their testimony. Mm-hmm. You get one chance to testify. It's a long testimony. You don't just say, this guy killed someone, and Basin says, okay, you're locked in. Yeah. They take you to a side room, and they grill you, right? You guys learned Masachah Sanhedrin, Drisha V'Chakira, right? There's a whole interrogation process where they ask you all the... They try to make sure that your story makes some sense. Yeah. Sure. Once they finish that process and they have extracted a testimony out of you, that testimony cannot be changed, right? So again...
But you confess that you lied.
Yes. You can't confess. I said my testimony. There's no more... Anything else I would say is changing your testimony.
You've already given false witness. The punishment if you...
Well, that's what we're getting to here. Rabbi Akiva said there is a case of confession where they don't pay.
Yes.
There's a case of confession. And I'm just telling you, it can't be the simple case where they've testified and they come back and they say...
Not just that.
It was a mistake. Sorry, guys. Ignore what I said yesterday. Basin says, too late, right? You've testified. There's no altering your testimony at this point. So what we're trying to do at this point is just prove that it's a fine, right? That's all we're trying to do at this point is prove that false witnesses is a fine. And Rabba's proof was they haven't done anything to anybody, right? They got punished before they actually got their punishment successful on the defendant, right? So it must be a fine. Can't be a compensation. Rav Nachman on the bottom line says, Teda, I'll bring you a different proof, sounds like. I'll bring you another proof that it's a fine. Shehare mamun biad bailun u'mishalmin. Because when they accused Joe of owing money, he never paid any money. The money's still in his pocket. He never had to pay anything out. And yet the false witnesses will have to pay him if they get caught. Sounds like the exact same thing. Right? What's the difference between the first and the second thing? The first thing was that it must be a fine because they didn't do an action, they didn't succeed in their scheme, and that they're still killed. The second one says they didn't cost the guy any money because he still has the money in his pocket, and yet they have to pay. It sounds like the exact same thing. So the Gemara says, "My nihu de lo asu maisa." What does it mean that they didn't do any action? Hainu de Rabba. It sounds the same thing. Isn't Rav Nachman's statement, Rav Nachman's second statement, when he said they didn't cost the guy any money yet, that's like the exact same thing as they didn't do an action. They didn't succeed in their plot. Which means Rabba is the same as Rav Nachman. Those two proofs seem to be exactly the same. So why would we bring two proofs that are exactly the same? It sounds like the Gemara is trying to say that there's different proofs. If it brings one proof, it brings another proof. But at the end of the day, it sounds like these proofs are identical. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. So the Gemara says, this is an easy one. Ema v'chein amar Rav Nachman. Just change it to, and so said Rav Nachman. Meaning we have two people saying essentially the same proof in different words. In different words. Okay? So up till here, we've proved that it is a fine. And therefore...
So why bring it up twice, though?
Oh, it's just two different people were talking in two different contexts. And the Gemara is just mentioning both. It's a good question why the Gemara needs to mention it twice. Yeah. But sometimes it does it v'chein. And you have, similarly, you have support for your position that it's a fine. You have another opinion, another rabbi that said the same thing. So what we've said now is, even though it's a fine, and therefore a fine, you don't pay based on confession. But we also just said, you can't change your testimony. So what is the case that they confess and yet don't pay? Right? Where we accept their confession. What is the case where we accept their confession, right? And accept their change in testimony, so to speak. So I'm trying to think of the best way to do it. I'm just going to tell you, because Rashi told us on the previous page, and then the next part will make more sense. So the only case where the false witnesses don't pay anything based on their own confession, meaning that their confession ends the trial, we accept their confession, and they still don't pay, is when they testified in Tel Aviv, right? So they testified in Tel Aviv that Joe killed somebody.
And the trial was
the trial ended, right? Boom, convicted.
In Tel Aviv.
Joe was not yet killed yet. Two more witnesses come along and they say, hey, you guys, how are you testifying about this murder in Tel Aviv? You were on vacation with us in Cyprus that weekend, right? And immediately, boom, before Beistin is even able to rule on their punishment for testifying falsely, before Beistin can rule on the false witnesses' punishment, they say this is a good time to flee the coup, right? So they flee to Jerusalem at this moment, right? They say, we're out of here, right? We're not sticking around to find out how the story ends. So they go to Jerusalem, right? Now, what happens in Jerusalem? They go to the Kaisel, and they want to do tshuva. They realize they did a big avera, right? So they decide it's now time to do tshuva. So they go to the local Beis Din in Jerusalem, and they say, you should know, we were already accused of being Edom Zomim. We were already accused of being false witnesses over there. So we're just coming to tell you guys over here that we're trying to do tshuva. So, and that is the case where that is a confession, right? That is a confession, right? In the first case, if this was all in Tel Aviv, it would be way too late for them to confess, right? It's too late to confess after the second set of witnesses has already come. But now that they've fled the scene to Jerusalem, they're not in any jeopardy right now. Nobody knows who they are. They're not in any danger, right? They're in a place where they're safe. So when they come and testify to the Beis Din, what they're testifying is there's already been false... They're not testifying that... They're not changing their testimony. They're saying we had a second set of witnesses that said we're false witnesses, and we're now admitting. Even though Beis Din there hadn't ruled on anything. We're not guilty yet of any crime, right? We're not guilty of it. I don't owe anything yet. I'm not subject to any punishment right now. I need a new trial to establish that. They're saying that is a type of a confession that we would not then continue the trial. They actually get off the hook for this. So this is a nice loophole for Edom Zomim, right? If they want to get out of it. Wait till the second set of witnesses come and then flee the scene. Then immediately go as fast as you can to a Beis Din in another place. Right?
They can play the odds.
How is this? What is the principle I told you that is very important for Maseches Makos is that we believe in God. Right? When you start playing loopholes with this, God's going to get you. But if they are legitimate in their tshuva, so that is the approach the Torah sets out, that we're not supposed to give them this punishment if they are legitimate in their tshuva process.
They go back to Tel Aviv, nothing happened?
No, then they can, if they go back to the same base, then they're in trouble. Right? Yeah. It's only if they go to a different base. So this is a very slight loophole in the system. If they are using it as a loophole, Hashem will find a nice loophole for them too. Right? But if they're legitimate, right, after they've moved and they really are doing tshuva after they fled the scene, so then they actually can get off the hook.
So just understand, if they flee the scene, are they doing this before the penalty is carried out?
For
sure. If they succeed in getting there, then there's never a consequence for them, even if they stay in Tel Aviv.
So if afterwards the penalty is carried out, Can they still do tshuva, or do they have any tshuva for?
They could. They should do tshuva, but they're still going to get the punishment applied to them, right? Anybody who gets convicted by Beis Din of anything should do tshuva, but the punishment is supposed to serve as the atonement process to help them with their tshuva process.
Okay, but the person got executed.
It doesn't matter. So they're going to get killed too. Yeah, but that killing, they should still do tshuva. There's a Gemara in the sixth parak of Sanhedrin. You guys learned Sanhedrin, right? It talks about anybody who's about to get the death penalty needs to confess, like Yehoshua did to Achan, right, in the story, in the first few stories there in Sefer Yehoshua, in the book of Yehoshua. Right, that Achan stole from Jericho and he got the death penalty, and Yehoshua tried to get him to confess, because if you confess, you'll get Olam Haba. It's still worthwhile to do tshuva. Tshuva is always worthwhile, right?
Yeah.
When we say that, you know, God's going to set the record straight, so to speak, if they, the penalty has been carried out, so the victim has been executed, let's say, and then these guys have no consequence, do we still say that God's going to...
Of course. Of course. That's where we need this. That's where we need God the most.
Even if they do tshuva, God will.
Right? No, there's a. I mean, God will now assess what is the appropriate punishment based on their tshuva, but it's not for us to get involved.
Okay.
Very good. Okay. Now, moving on. Amar Rav, second line. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, a vague statement. Now, this is going back on our issue, but he just made a very vague statement, and we have to try to figure out what he meant. He says, Eid zomem mishalom lefi chelko. A false witness, in the singular, pays according to his share. That's his statement. A false witness pays according to his share. Okay, so we have to figure out what on earth he meant. My mishalom lefi chelko. What does that mean? Right? What does it mean that a false witness pays according to his share? We have a few tries that are not going to work. Let's try. Ilema, if you want to tell me, dehai mishalom palga v'hai mishalom palga, that when the false witnesses accuse the guy of stealing, right, so they tried to cost him money, so now, how did they get assessed to have to pay the money when they get caught? So each one pays half what they tried to cause, right? There's two witnesses in the set. They each pay half, right? They don't each have to pay the full amount. They each only pay the half amount. So maybe that's what it means, that a false witness pays according to his share. He doesn't have to pay the whole thing. He only has to divide it up and pay his share of the crime, the conspiracy they were trying. So the Gemara says that can't be what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav meant. It's true. It's true that they pay half and half. It just can't be what he meant, because we already have a Mishnah that teaches us that, right? Rav Yehuda Amar Rav is an Amora. He comes after the Mishnahs. He's not coming to tell me something that's already in a Mishnah. He doesn't need to waste his words. Right? We have a Mishnah that tells us this halacha already. You don't need Rav Yehuda Amar Rav to tell me this halacha. So it says, Tanina, I already learned this in a Mishnah. Now we just quote the Mishnah. Mishal Shalin B'mamon, we divide money, Ve'ein B'shal Shalin B'makos. But if the punishment that they're getting is lashes, that they don't divide amongst them, they each get a full set. Yeah. Right? So money gets divisible, and also the death penalty would be the same, right? You can't divide up a half death penalty.
You get half,
right? Yeah. Money gets divided, but the other stuff doesn't. Now, just a side point here, the word that they use here for divided is Mishal Shalin, which is a root of divisible by three, really. The halacha they're trying to tell us on the side here is that sets of witnesses are not limited to two. Now, you could have a set of witnesses with 100 if they all come together and testify as one set. So regardless of how many witnesses there are, they always divide up the money equally amongst them.
But not the lashes.
So if they accuse a guy of $100 and there's 100 witnesses, they only have to pay $1 each, right? But the total is that there is getting to the 100, but the lashes they'd get in full. So it says, Mishal Shalin B'makos, they divide by three, just trying to allude that if there's more than two witnesses, then they would continue dividing it equally amongst the witnesses. But not in terms of makos. So again, that can't. It makes sense. It's true that they divide it up. It just can't be what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav meant, because it's a Mishnah that already teaches us that before that. Ella, rather, next try. Kigom de itzu mechad minayu. Let's say only one of the two witnesses was falsified. Right, the second set of witnesses came and they say, I don't know about both of you guys. Reuven and Shimon. I don't know about both of you guys. Reuven was with us in China, though. I don't know about Shimon. Shimon may have seen the murder. I can't say. Right, but Reuven was for sure with us in China that day. So maybe in that case, Reuven will by himself have to pay his share of the debt, whereas Shimon has to pay nothing because he never got falsified. Maybe that's what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav meant. That when you can only falsify one of them, only one of the two has to pay.
Wait a minute, they both testified, so how can...
But only one of them was able to be falsified.
Yeah.
Meaning once we knock out one of them, we destroyed their set of testimony.
Right.
Right? We've eliminated their set of testimony, so maybe only one of them is going to have to pay.
Like a set, because the two Zolomi, because they're each claiming that they were together witnessing.
One is one.
But it's correct. One of them be lying.
The
they're both lying.
It's a good point. Meaning, very good point. Just save that for 1 second. Let's see how the Gemara addresses this. So the Gemara suggests maybe only one of the two of them was falsified. The Mishalim Palga Didei. And Rav Yehuda and Amar Rav meant he should pay his share. His share of the debt. Because he was the only one that was falsified. So he's only going to get half. The victim's only going to get half. The Gemara says, Umi Mishalim? Does one guy pay when only half the set of witnesses was falsified? Negative. Right? You don't... Meaning, you, I'm not sure which way you were suggesting. Were you saying that when one is falsified, for sure both are falsified, and therefore they should both pay? Meaning, we never falsified the second witness, right? We were never able to get a clear falsification on him. So the Gemara says nobody would pay in that. It's true, we throw out the case when we falsify one of the members of the set of witnesses. We throw out the case, but we don't treat them with the reciprocal punishment and give any of them the punishment as they conspired to do. We don't give anybody the punishment in this case either.
The other witness says we.
It's true, but you need to... Here, I'll just quote you the right? Hatanya, because we learned in a brisa, Ein eid zomem mishalem. A false witness does not pay mamon money ad shi azomu shneim until both of them have been falsified. Now, it's true, there is in technicality, they've essentially both been falsified, because Reuven and Shimon say they both testified that they both saw an incident together. Right. And now, second set says, Reuven, you were with us in China, which means Shimon wasn't with Reuven. Yeah. So there's some element of falsification going on. However, you need a full falsification of both witnesses in order to apply the punishment that the Torah has here of kasher zamam, as you conspire to do. There needs to be that everybody in the set gets... falsified. So again, just bring this to what we said before. Let's say there's 100 witnesses in the set, right? So you need to falsify all 100 witnesses. If you could falsify 99 of them, you're not going to be able to punish any of them. You need to falsify every single member in the set in order to give anybody in the set a punishment. Okay? So that's what it's saying over here. So that's actually not true. So it can't be that that's what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav meant, that we give the one false witness we were able to falsify his punishment, and we leave the other guy free. We can't do that. You can only give any of them a punishment once you falsified everybody and give everybody a punishment. So we're still trying to figure out what was this statement, this vague statement made by Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, that a false witness pays according to his share. It doesn't mean that they each pay half, because that's a mishnah already, right? We know that point. It's true. They do each pay half, right? But it also doesn't mean that they give a punishment. Beis Din will give a punishment to the one that they can, to the one that they did falsify, and let the other one go, because they won't punish anybody unless they can falsify everybody.
I have a quick question. So what if the two witnesses, one's a very, very wealthy guy, and one's a very poor guy, but it's a financial penalty? Wouldn't his share mean the wealthy guy has to pay more?
No. We don't. Fair share does not work like that. Like your fair share of taxes in the Democratic Republican debates here in the States. A person's fair share is the same amount. That's fair share. If we both did the same thing, the same crime, fair share is we both get the same consequence.
The penalty was slavery, right? They have to go and be enslaved because you don't have the money to pay it.
If the guy
one guy did and one guy didn't.
Right, so then that would be... Right, so then it would fall back on the previous... Well, that would fall back on the previous conversation we had about the slaves. That if neither the guy who they were accusing nor either of the witnesses had any money, that's when the witnesses get sold into slavery.
Right.
But if not, they don't. So what happens now? The guy just has a debt. If he doesn't have the money to pay, he has a debt. That happens sometimes, right? You owe this guy money, and Beis Din may start garnishing your wages if you're not careful, right? If they can, they can start taking it straight from your paycheck. I don't know, right? It's a good question. Exactly what Beis Din's recourse is, right, to make sure that somebody who has a debt to Beis Din will pay it, whether they, right? They do something like that. They'll garnish your wages or something like that. Yeah.
If you sold and you have money, you know you can redeem yourself.
You won't be able to get sold if the other guy's paying. It has to be that nobody can get sold here, right? The guy they're accusing doesn't have money, and they don't have. Neither of them have money. Right, so they won't get sold. He'll just end up having a debt, right? Mm-hmm. He'll have a debt that he has to pay. It's the same like in the previous case, right? Yeah. They don't get sold. So what if the guy has no money? The false witness says, I have no money, but the guy I was accusing did have money, so I'm not going to get sold. So what happens? I am off the hook? No. Beis Din says, you owe the money, and we're going to collect it from you as soon as we can collect it from you, right?
You see, the sheriff's around.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to stop here. I know we're right in the middle, but we'll have to stop here. We're going to continue by trying to figure out what did Rav Yehuda Amar Rav mean when he said a false witness gets paid according to his share? Because it doesn't mean that they each pay half, because that's a mishnah, and it also doesn't mean that we make one guy pay when we can't falsify the other one, because that's not true. We only make them both pay when they both get convicted. Okay, guys.